welcome you on our last session for an introduction to self-compassion with Robert Gonzalez.
I'd like to begin with an opening attunement and guided meditation. I just want to say one thing about this opening attunement and guided meditation. For me, it's been valuable to remember this kind of attunement, not just for a formal opening in a process like this, but it's helped me to remember it as a way to remember to create openings and pausing and time in my entire life. So in that spirit, I just ask you to consciously intend to be here, just to be present. And it's really not so much about doing anything as it is about letting all the doing go and simply being and allowing whatever's simply naturally there to be there. Be with your physical body, your physical existence. Be with your breathing. Be with all of the different ways in which your consciousness exists. Physical sensations, emotional feelings, thoughts, any ongoing narrative that's going on, just welcome it all without resisting it. Feel the qualities of open flow, enjoyment, fullness, or discomfort, tightness, closing down. Just be with it all. Living with self-compassion for me is living at a different speed of life. There's a pacing that is slower, more deliberate, allows more conscious presence in every aspect of our inner experiencing and our actions and communication. Breathe. Feel what you're feeling. Is there something in your feeling that is just a wanting? Is there a longing in you? And notice if your mind comes in to talk to you about your longing or about the lack of the longing or whatever is there or isn't there. And just allow yourself to feel the longing, even if you don't know what you're longing for. Feel the longing for quality of life you desire to have within yourself. There are longing for the quality of relating, relationships, community that you want to have. You long to belong. Just continue to be with your breathing and all the bodily felt, emotional felt energies and sensations that are flowing through you. Allowing ourselves to come to this life flow in us can be nurturing, nourishing, that these energies feed us, that we are fed by the energies of care, by the energies of warmth, by the energy of open breath and life. We don't live by bread alone. We are nourished by these subtler life energies. And when we don't get the nourishment, we feel hungry. We can starve ourselves unknowingly for life that nourishes. So, to whatever degree you're able, feel the nourishment of the feeling life in you. So, in the state that you're in, I'd like you to open to a state of receptivity, and I'm going to share a reading with you by Stephen Schwartz, who's developed his own work. He no longer is alive, but his work was the work of compassionate self-care, which is very consistent with self-compassion. I'll begin. This work is an exercise in nonviolence towards oneself, approaching everything we've called an enemy with absolute, undeviating love. It is an exercise in personal nonviolence, the most unbelievable compassion. There are people who would try to bring nonviolence into the world, even though they can't approach their own loneliness with complete nonviolence. How could they deal with somebody else in a nonviolent way? No nonviolence means that you have no enemies inside yourself, that your loneliness, your grief, your anger are not your enemies. So I'd like to begin. There's two different aspects I'd like to talk about. This notion, the reality of self-compassion, and then, of course, by extension, compassionate communication or compassionate relationships. The actuality of the experience is really nothing new. The quality of connecting to our fullness and our wholeness, the quality of allowing compassionately our own inner experience, of compassionately and empathically meeting another human being to allow and to hear their deepest feelings, their deepest celebration, their deepest joy, their deepest pain in a context of real love is nothing new. I think what is new are ways to access that, not only this process, not only nonviolent communication, but many, many other approaches in life that many people are sharing, very rich ways to access this inner reality. And so what I share is one way. There are many other people who share different ways to do it. And so my understanding of what this is it's certainly, this is not a methodology. It's not a technique. It's not even a teaching, so to speak, as something that you learn. But it's actually a journey, an inner journey. And in this inner journey, as we know, we're not able to navigate an inner journey unless we have some guidance, a kind of a map, sort of an inner cartography. So as I view what I share and what I offer, this is how I see it. And one of the parts of the inner cartography or this inner map, the guide to this territory of life within and between, it carries certain principles. So I want to give an overview of some of the core principles and some of the core capacities of this process. You may want to take some notes to remember these if it may be important to you. Let me start with the core principles of this work, the work of living compassion. The implication or the context of this work is that it is a reorientation to life and to beauty itself. It's a reorientation to the core longings. I'm using different words that are expressing the same thing, basically. So life in our unfolding, in our transformative movement, what we're actually doing is we're reorienting our consciousness towards life. We're reorienting our consciousness towards beauty so that we can more and more live in that fullness within ourselves and live in that fullness within our connections with other people. The first principle, as I stated before, is that there's only one life energy. There isn't two. Some notions of life approaches, some belief systems talk about there's good and there's evil. And so for me, that does not resonate with the inner reality that lives in me, that there is only one life force, one life source that manifests in and through every single human being. And that on the human level, every action, everything that we do and say is an expression of this life energy. It's an expression of life's longing for itself. In even simple, mundane, everything. And that human suffering results when this life energy, this life fulfillment desire is blocked in some way, is obstructed. And that the primary source of our suffering happens through our life experiences, through cultural conditioning, the ways that we learn how to view life, interpret life from the perspective of our separation, from the perspective of good and bad, comparing, better than, less than, judging, criticizing, all of those tendencies. And that the healing comes through compassion. That compassion liberates that energy that is caught in the suffering. And that when our energy is liberated, when it's free to feel the fullness of it, this energy is not something that we keep inside and enjoy as a self-nourishing only process, but that it goes out into life seeking communion, seeking connection, looking for belonging. And so all of those elements for me are very, very important in living this work, living the consciousness that this work points to. And so much of the time when I have offered, taught compassionate communication, nonviolent communication, the messages come that certainly this is nothing new. This is what all the religions and even all the ethical systems of love your neighbor as yourself, that universal ethic, but invariably these traditions don't always or clearly say, well, how do you do this? How do we do this? How do we come to nonviolence? How do we come to love ourselves and love our neighbors as ourselves? How do we love? And so for me, the value of a process like nonviolent communication and certainly other processes that are out there is it actually shows us how to direct our attention, our energy, our consciousness to our own experience and to the relationship and communication so that we are able to actually connect to and live authentically, to live in mutual respect and mutual care. So I want to identify some of the basic capacities, and I'm going to say them in a particular order, a certain sequence, although they are all kind of there. Some of them are sequential, but they're all sort of present in an organic process. Number one, for me, it starts with an intentionality, that we have an intentionality for our entire life, that our intentionality has to do with the quality of life that we want and that we yearn for, to be true to our heart, to be true to that which we value about life, our intentionality to live that. So there is an encompassing, an awareness of that intentionality. And then as we approach our life experience moment by moment, specific experience, it's often supported by the awareness of, just say, any one given experience, by being able to identify what is going on here. In other words, what stimulated this experience? I want to come to an understanding. I want to come to a real connection. And so we need to be able to identify, well, what stimulated this experience? So that awareness is important, that moment by moment, this requires an awareness. And so in any life event, we may experience something that we don't like, something we're uncomfortable with, or even something that we do enjoy, but we don't express. Maybe we don't allow ourselves to fully come to it and express and live it. So one of the first parts of living this way is the capacity to identify when we are in some kind of a pulled-in, constricted, contracted, reactive place. That we are able to identify, differentiate between the thoughts and the actual experience. So this is a basic capacity that's really important to this whole work. Distinguishing between a happening, a world event, and my interpretation of this world event. And then distinguishing between components of how I experience the world. Being able to identify thought as thought. There's a story, there's a narrative. Be able to distinguish the emotion, feeling, and then be able to distinguish the longing, the need. And then we'll go back to the thoughts. How we approach our reactive thoughts, you can call them our jackal thoughts, is one in which we embrace them. So this is key to all of self-compassion. Embracing means we approach them and we listen to them. We listen to our thinking. We listen to the story. And in the listening, something happens. We begin to differentiate between the story and the feeling behind it. This is one of the basic capacities, is to listen that there's a difference between the felt energy that we're feeling in any experience and the reactive story, our interpretation, or any evaluation that we're making about that. This is one of the most key areas of our inner awareness and inner transformation. It also means the ability to identify and be with sensations and feelings and longings. We not only identify them, but it encompasses the capacity to actually experience them, to feel them fully, to feel our feelings, to feel our longings. And when there's an unfulfilled longing, this is where the difference between suffering and mourning comes. To be able to truly mourn. And when we are suffering, to then further differentiate between the story we're telling ourselves about how horrible this experience is, how it will never end, all the stories that create hopelessness, to differentiate that between that and the actual longing, so that when we mourn, we experience the sadness of the absence of something that is precious to us. So that in mourning, we go to that which is precious, and we feel that which is precious but absent in this experience. And then there's an acceptance. Rather than rejecting the absence, there's an acceptance of this is not here. In that space of acceptance, we can begin to have compassion for ourselves. And then we are able to dwell in the quality of that longing, even though it's absent in this moment. So we have an interaction with someone, and we experience that we have not been seen or understood in the way that we long to be seen and understood and accepted. We can feel the pain of that, the disappointment, the sadness. Feel pain only because there's something precious that is longed for. So we can dwell in that longing. And when we do that, this is healing. So then the other capacity is to be able to dwell in the longing as a felt sense, felt energy in the body, and to sustain it. Sustain it, to build it, to nourish it within us. Even though it may not be present in our experience, we build it, we dwell in it. This is an overview of at least some of the basic capacities in this inner work. I'm wondering if there's any response or questions in relation to what I've just described.
I really love the process. However, there's some thoughts I have where I don't seem to be able to get a differentiation. Something in me is so scared that it will not let go. And sometimes I feel I have to give up doing Robert's work because I don't seem to manage that, that other people manage. It's really painful. And for some time I was quite disturbed in my mind and thought things were happening that weren't happening. So sometimes it doesn't feel like there's something that can trust. There's not the space to say, this isn't happening or this isn't true. And I don't know how to work with that. And I don't know if you have anything to say.
I do, Amanda. I think it's an important point. Let me see if I can, in a nutshell, reflect, is that there are certain life experiences within you that you're not able to differentiate the thinking, that it's so got a hold of you that you're not able to differentiate and find the longings, and that you get kind of caught up or lost in that thought or the story, convinced that it's true.
That's almost there, but sometimes there's a part of my mind that knows it's not true, but the other part won't let that be said.
Yeah, the part of your mind that knows that it's not true is almost irrelevant here because it doesn't really help. And what's really important is the part of you that's convinced. And so the question is, when you're not able to differentiate, what do you do? What do you do? And for me, the approach is empathy. Is really allow and listen to that part, because that has a very strong voice, a strong energy that's speaking. So we want to approach that in you, that voice, that thought, that it is saying something to you, that it's pointing to something that is very important. We want to listen to it. Give it space. Give it compassion. Listen to it. And even venting it, just allow it to vent. Say it with that unrestricted expression Not necessarily believing it, but listening for what it's longing for, listening for the unmet needs, listening mm-hmm. for the painful feelings, giving room for that voice.
Yeah, thank you. That helps, because otherwise I was getting into more self-attack of now I can't do it and all that.
Yes, I appreciate that. And I think there's so many moments in this kind of a practice where it's easy or it's tempting to fall back into that, I can't do it. This is too hard, and then the tendency to self-judge comes back in a very strong way.
Thank you, Robert.
Yes, you're welcome. Yes, you have your hand up.
I find I frequently get stuck in a somewhat different place. I'm feeling my feelings, and usually I've identified the need, but it's like I kind of stay there. So it's like 10, 15 minutes of, okay, I'm feeling sad, hurt, whatever, and these needs for whatever. It's like how to move beyond that stuckness. It's like, okay, enough of this pain. Could I have something shift?
Yeah. Can you give me a quick example of that? Because I can give you the thought behind it. I think it might be more helpful if you can connect to it experientially.
Yeah, there's a small experience with a person I've had a whole lot of history with. She asked me for a $10 discount on the rent of the space I provide to this meditation group. I don't charge them nearly the amount which it costs me. So it's like, you don't see how much I'm giving you. So I was able to get that judgment. I was able to feel that the hurt and the frustration and identify the need for appreciation and recognition and support. But I didn't get beyond that.
So let me just pause there for a moment, because so much of this process requires pausing and entering deeply into it. So when you say your need was for appreciation, recognition, and support, so can you stay there for a moment? Feel into, can you feel how important appreciation is? Feel it in your body. Support, recognition.
There's like a pulling back from some of those needs.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's not really safe to really feel some of those needs deeply. It's a fear of need.
Yeah, so I'm sensing that's a hint to what would support you in moving through it rather than having the limitation of your experience. Just even your recognition is helpful. So you notice you're pulling back from the need, which means you're not entering into the need. You're not feeling the fullness. So there's fear there. You can approach that fear. Are you scared? Is there some vulnerability in there? And you're not trusting that you'll be able to, I'm not sure what, just not trusting in that.
Trusting that need could ever be met.
Yeah, okay. So just notice that. You just so much want to trust that need and those needs can be met in life.
Yeah.
And is it hard to even access those inner energies, those inner qualities of those needs of appreciation and recognition and support? Because that fear comes up.
Fear comes up, and then also just an awareness of profound wounding from my childhood comes up.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So when that awareness comes up, you allow that, because there's a part of you that's coming to the surface, a young part, a little girl part that's been wounded and hurt. She's the one that is fearful. She's the one that's wanting the deeper acceptance and the love. Listen to her. You feel her.
I can do that.
Yeah. So even in this moment, are you feeling that just a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
And how does that feel?
Warm. Warm and kind.
Yeah, yeah. So it may be that when you were stimulated by this person around renting the space, that it touched something deeper in you that isn't directly related to the appreciation you'd want from this other person, but it brings up something deeper in you. And then you can touch and nourish that and feel that warmth for that little girl in you that's scared. And, you know, those wounded parts of us, I think, are almost always present in life. And we tend to not access them, or we tend to close ourselves off and not make ourselves vulnerable. And they're very tender, young, sweet parts that, you know, from the logical point of view, have nothing to do with the interaction sometimes, you know, but they still get activated. We may feel hurt, and our mind tells us, oh, why are we making such a fuss about something? It's not a big deal. But it just is it's an opening. It's a doorway into ourselves. I appreciate your willingness to take a few moments with me and open to that and be vulnerable with me and with all of us. Thank you.
I could relate to this wounded part. And I understand, you know, we're supposed to just follow the energy wherever it takes us. And I'm just wondering, is there a point where we give the love and the support and the appreciation to that part of us that is yearning for it, let's say a little girl or a little boy inside of us? Or are we just supposed to stay more into feeling whatever's coming up?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Could you reword that again?
I'm trying to understand this process as you're presenting it. In the inner child work that I learned years ago, there was a whole movement where you were to give your inner child the love and support that maybe you didn't get growing up. And I'm just wondering, is there a place for that in this work, or is this different?
Well, for me, I think it's similar and different, because the concept of inner child for me is a construct. When we go into the energy of it, there is no inner child. It's just an aspect of our inner experience. And we enter into the energy of it. Now, if the construct inner child helps, then it's helpful. I'd say, let's use that. It's a doorway into that living energy in us. The point of this work is to connect to that living energy. And then part of that energy can be scared and vulnerable. So we listen to that and we empathize with that aspect of us. We allow it, listen to it, and then it can begin to relax, much as I think happened a moment ago. So we empathize with that part of us, and we connect into the life, not just the energy per se, but the longings, the longing for acceptance, the longing for warmth, the longing for trust.
And let's say that you're still dealing with your parents who are alive, and the same needs that you had as a child aren't being met as an adult, for example.
Yeah. For me, it's the same process. The only difference is the stimulus is present moment rather than a living memory that exists within your system. The internal dynamic is the same, even though the stimulus is different. So in any given situation, if there's a stimulus in which a need or needs are not being fulfilled, the self-empathy approach is that you approach your experience, you identify the stimulus, you notice the story or the thought, you differentiate if you're able to, you approach the longings, the needs within that experience, you allow it, you feel it. So again, the distinction is between a present moment stimulus or a stimulus that you carry within your system in terms of a living memory. Does that distinction help?
It does. Thank you.
So there's two other points I wanted to make. I noticed that a lot of the points that I make are really things that I've said before, and I think that there's so much of this work that I found it helpful to come back to over and over again as reminders. So this work is not necessarily helpful at the level of information, because I think we all have the information, but it's helpful at the level of remembering and applying certain awareness. What I wanted to bring to attention is so much of living compassionately with ourselves, this deep kind of self-acceptance, is served by slowing down the process, pausing. There's a phrase that came to me a couple of years ago, or it said, jackals feed on speed. The life-alienating reactive tendencies are supported when we just move about at a certain pace of life, and compassionate presence is supported by pausing, the pacing at which we live, at which we experience. So slowing down is actually part of an awareness practice, a living practice, and I see it as a threshold to self-compassion. So we actually, I need to remember to pause. So if I find myself caught up in a certain energy or frenetic movement in my life, I notice it because it's constricting, it's tight, there's tension, and I remember to pause. So in the paired exercise that I'm going to suggest in a few moments, I want to suggest you and your pair actually deliberately pause before speaking and while you're speaking and pause to enter into it, pause and slow down and enter into an experience. Feel it. Feel deeply into a longing. And if something comes up like a fear or another thought, listen to that. Empathize with that. So that's the pausing part I wanted to mention. And then the other part that I wanted to say is, even though this class has been on self-compassion and the focus has been there, it's impossible to separate self-compassion from compassionate communication or compassionate mutuality. It always goes together. I had a particular experience when I was practicing. I've developed a practice called meditation on the beauty of needs, which is an actual meditation process you can do in dyads and different forms where you focus on a particular quality, a longing, a need that you'd like to deepen into. And this particular quality I was working on was self-acceptance. And I was at a workshop facility doing this work with another person, and I noticed that in the workshop room, a very unusual thing happened. A maintenance man walked in the room and was looking at the thermostat and adjusting it or doing something. I was a little shocked because almost always when I'm at facilities like that, we're not disturbed. You know, people don't come into the room. They recognize that we want that. We want the respect and of the privacy. And this person, I was a little shocked. They walked right in the room, and immediately I noticed the energy came up, a little bit of a judging energy, not so much in real obvious jackals, but just the energy came up and how easy it would be for me to start judging him. And I don't remember the thoughts that came up, but it was something like, what is he doing? How dare he? Doesn't he know that we're not to be disturbed? And so the energy was one of jackal, one of judgment, even though the words weren't necessarily easily identified as judging energy. And I noticed that while it appeared that if I had communicated that to him or to another person, what was going on was within me, the energy, the feeling, the constriction, was something in which I wasn't accepting my inner experience. So while it appeared that it was about accepting of him, acceptance of another, that was really going on, it was my own acceptance of my own experience, that I wasn't allowing something within me, and this person was simply the stimulus for that. Now, I'm not saying that under certain circumstances where there's a stimulus that I would not go to that person and communicate and connect with them about what I'm valuing and what I'm needing in any given situation. But I guess the point that I'm making is that the source of the distress was within me, and that until I was able to come to some kind of connection with my own inner life, my own longing behind the constricting judgment, I wouldn't be able to fully communicate with him or anyone else. So there's just that one story that I wanted to tell that was very instrumental in my own experience. So self-compassion and compassionate mutuality for me always go hand in hand. Does anybody have any response to that?
I was wanting to say how much I appreciated that in the self-connection process, you spoke about how self-compassion for you involves a different pacing than we're used to. And then you spoke about that again, that, you know, slowing down and pausing is just so incredibly essential. That really touched me in the self-connection process, because I was kind of trying to figure out why, even knowing about self-compassion and compassionate embrace, it's still so painful sometimes that in the moment that something is arising within me because of an interaction that I'm having in life, there's still this kind of like numbing that has happened. And something about the way that you expressed it, that it's an essential piece of being able to connect with another in the way that I'm longing to, has to do with that willingness to pause instead of allowing the urgent reaction to be present. Just really grateful for how you're drawing our attention to that today. It's really been very rich for me. So then I kind of missed something, and it was the very last thing you said before you opened to conversation. And you were talking about self-connection, and you were sharing the story about your experience with the worker who came into the workshop. And my understanding is that even though I might be outwardly focused initially, you know, in that judgment place of like the thoughts, what is he doing? How dare he? That really where I want to put my attention is within myself, because the source of that upset and the angst I'm feeling has nothing to do with him coming into the room. It has to do with how I'm responding to his entry. So I think I've gotten that piece, yes?
And yes, so, absolutely.
So what you said that I missed, and I just wanted you to maybe fill in the blank, is you said the source of distress is within me until I can connect with my own longings behind the constricted judgment, and then you cut out and I kind of like lost the...
I think it's something, until I can connect with my own longings, I will not be able to have an authentic connection with the other person. I won't be able to bring my living needs, my longings to him or her.
So in other words, if we're to attempt to have any kind of a dialogue and share what's going on for me or my, you know, my upset, that until I've connected with what's really going on with me and what I was longing for that wasn't met by his entry, there's not a likelihood of having the kind of connection that I want to be heard and understood.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
Yes, you're welcome. Okay, two more hands.
I'm particularly interested in the example that you used, because in our last session, you were talking about boundaries, and I felt a little bit confused because I've been working establishing boundaries, and it sounded as though boundaries perhaps were an obstacle. The situation is a friend of mine who is from another culture in which friends drop in on friends whenever they wish to, unannounced. She happens to be a person who is willing to share her opinion about everything, the condition of the house or the color of the walls or what I'm wearing or whatever. And I feel like she is violating my personal space when she just comes in and offers her opinion. But I'm also aware that as a small child, my boundaries were violated, and I'm finding it difficult to sort out what I have a right to, well, not necessarily a right to, but what to myself I must establish boundaries. Can you follow my dilemma?
Yeah. Yes, I can. I think that what I want to say, I'm hoping, would really just cut through and simplify the dilemma. My understanding of boundaries is I see it as a psychological construct that can be quite helpful when we're able to apply it, but I think it can create not as clear connections as just, say, the concept of needs. It can not be as empowering in my experience. So what I like to do is just simply translate boundaries into needs, translate boundaries into what you're valuing, and then it can be empowering, and then we can communicate authentically with another person. So if someone is doing something that's not in harmony with what our needs are, what we value, we simply communicate that to them. And then we make requests. We communicate so that they can connect with us. It's not about boundaries, but it's about needs.
I have met, and she was insulted, because that is not her culture.
I understand. Then if you do that, and then she's not able to hear it, it's because she has needs that are present in her. Until you're able to develop a mutual understanding around that. So she was insulted, meaning that she has needs that are met by what she does. And she wants to hear that you hear her needs and that her needs matter to you. So when there's enough mutual empathy of expressing and hearing each other's needs, only then, I think, is there any hope for true mutual respect.
Okay.
So it's in the hearing. And for me, there's a distinction that is very important between needs getting met and needs mattering. So in compassionate mutuality, the intention is to come to a space, a mutual space, in which both of our needs matter to each other.
So going back to your example with the maintenance person, you would not have spoken to him until you were clear about what your own longing was.
Yes, and not only that, clear about what my sensing his longing, what his need is.
And at that point, you might ask him.
Yes, at that point, I might ask. And I could guess pretty much. He'd say, well, I'm just doing my job, you know.
Right.
So, but then he could hear mine, and I could hear his. Then we can find a way out of that mutual mattering that's going to work for both of us.
And would you say that perhaps I was premature in expressing my own need for privacy until I was clear about where it was coming from?
Well, not only that, I wouldn't necessarily use the word premature, but actually this touches into how we prepare to have a mutual dialogue. And so that's one part of it. That's the first half of it, is I want to be sure that I am clearly connected to the beauty of what I want, the beauty of my longing, of what I'm valuing, so that I communicate that energy. See, for me, privacy is the word that doesn't necessarily convey what I really value. And then I want to connect with the other person and empathize with them. That is the culture that they grew up in, that there's a certain amount that I'm guessing it's friendship or belonging is met by the allowing of coming over to your house whenever you want to, and there's a certain... I would just empathize with that. Listen for how important that is, for how meaningful that is in that other person. Really let them know that you're hearing it means that you value it.
Okay. Now I'm confused. When you say privacy is not a value...
No, I'm just saying that word doesn't convey for me what I would imagine what is the living value there. I think that is something else. Now, when you say privacy, are you not saying that there's a certain kind of consideration and choice that you value about when people come?
Yes.
And that you may be doing something that is really important for you in your own space. And before somebody enters that space, don't you want to be considered? Don't you want to have choice about it?
Yes.
Now, does that resonate in a different way than the word privacy?
Yes.
So just notice that, because when you connect up with the actual authenticity of what is really there, then I think you have much more power within yourself to communicate authentically.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate all of these questions and sharing. They're all so valuable. See, I notice your hand is up. I'd love to hear what you would like to share.
I have a question, but I can't formulate it, and I'm hoping that maybe you can hear the question and what I'm about to say.
Sure.
The situation has to do with my son's health, and I'm clear about my intentionality of wanting to be a loving presence in his life and to be a support and to contribute, and I have the awareness of the thoughts that I've grown up with and the beliefs that I've grown up with in terms of health and illness, putting a lot of positive implications into health and negative into illness, and such as can only be as happy as your saddest child. I'm getting caught up in the acceptance part. I've had another experience where I was a home teacher and I worked with very, very ill children, many terminal children, and I was really surprised at my response. In a very short while, I would see the child and I wouldn't see their disease or their condition, even though they were often extremely disfiguring. I just saw the child. And I thought about that a lot, and I think a lot of the reason and something that I learned from these families, and they had a belief system that they were in a lot of grief around the condition of the child, but they also had a lot of acceptance that God knew best.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I'm wanting to connect to the core of what you're trying to share so that I can help you with it. I'm getting the background that's been important for you that you bring to the situation with your son. And is there something about how you're responding to him? Is there an illness involved? I just would like to hear the essential element of your experience here?
The essential element is that person I am as a teacher is totally different than the person I am as a parent.
Yeah.
When I see my son suffering, he's got progressive MS and he's having difficult walking. I'm in touch with my longing and yearning for him to be healthy, and I'm stuck somewhere so that I don't feel like I'm contributing in the way that I would love to.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the part that's, when you say stuck, you're not contributing in the way that you want to. In other words, you've observed something or he's given you some feedback that shows you that there are certain needs that are not being fulfilled here. Is that true?
Yes, I bring in an anxiety. When he's looking better, I'm happier. When he's feeling worse, I'm sadder. You know, I'm very reactive.
Yeah, and when you're sad in that reactivity, it sounds like that's the distressing or problematic part of this experience for you.
Yes, because I don't feel that I'm a contribution in those moments.
Yeah. So it may be that you're wanting to contribute is, it's real, it's valid, but it's also not allowing you to feel the actual sadness in the morning, to fully mourn what you're feeling when you see him suffering, when you see his illness at a certain stage, and that in that moment you're wanting to mourn. And it may be confusing because you're thinking that, well, that's not contributing to him, but it's authentic for you.
Right.
And you may not choose to communicate the mourning to him, but you can hold it within yourself as something that's authentic. And it may be difficult, because I'm guessing you cherish your son and you cherish his well-being, and when you see that he's physically suffering in his disease process, that it triggers such deep mourning in you because you so long for his health and his well-being.
Right.
And simply being with him in that way, in your fullness, whether you say words or not, for me would be one of the greatest ways you can contribute to him. Because you can't take his condition away from him. All you can do is be with him on his journey. Be as fully loving, fully present as you're able to. I'm wondering just how you're receiving what I'm saying to you now.
I understand it. And somehow when I'm with him, I see him fall or something like that. I guess I go into fear. It's hard for me to accept it in the way that I was able to accept the other children that were not mine.
Yes, I hear that. I hear that it's understandable to me why you may have a much easier time with other children who are not yours. He is your son. And so in those moments, there be moments of intensity where you feel really scared. You see him fall. Those are the moments that it's the most difficult for you to just sense and feel into the fear and the pain around the fear, as your fear is telling you how much you care for him and how much you mourn whatever he goes through when he falls.
Maybe where I get stuck is that I'm trying so hard to hide my feelings.
Yeah, that's my guess. Hide it from yourself,
even. It's like I want to protect him from my feelings.
Yeah, and then I'm guessing that you also trying to protect in some way yourself from your feelings because you care for him and you want to contribute to him, and perhaps don't even allow yourself to fully feel the fear and sense that the fear is really points to how much you want his well-being and how much you mourn when you experience him falling or something like that.
So this reminds me, the other day you asked a question. You said, just what is it that we are protecting ourselves from?
Yes.
So is it just the feelings?
I think so. I think that you're protecting yourself from the perceived terribleness, whatever that is, of the pain, of whatever it is. It's something that's imagined, of feeling into the fear, not just staying in the fear, but feeling into it and through it. There's deep herring there, and there's pain. I'm just curious how you're feeling right now, in this moment, just with yourself and what you've shared and hearing what I reflected back.
I'm feeling a little more clarity. I'm feeling sad.
Sad, yeah.
I'm feeling sad. And a little more clarity around. I was having kind of flashes through my head, too, of how much we crave authenticity and how when my husband was sick and at one point I just lost it and I just started crying and sobbing and how he started comforting me, you know. It was like a relief. It was a release and a relief because it was real.
Yes.
I'm feeling that same building of tension in this situation. And so I think I'm getting how scared I've been of feeling the sadness.
Yeah, and it may be scared of what you think the sadness, how that'll affect your son.
Yes, definitely.
And my experience has been that when we share our authenticity, that it nourishes, that there's relief and release.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Robert, the example that you brought about someone walking into the room and then the example that someone else offered about someone essentially walking into their house uninvited touched a really strong need for me. You mentioned that slowing down is really a helpful part of this compassion, and I recognized that for me, space, you might call it private space or quiet space, there's something about if I'm interacting with somebody and something really painful is triggered inside of me, I just might need a lot of quiet space in that moment just to begin to find out what's going on. I don't know the right way to say that. I'm trying to get clear. I'm listening to somebody. I'm trying to get clear about my needs. I'm trying to find a good way to express that. But in the meantime, there's a whole lot of pain inside. And actually getting clear is virtually impossible because the triggering is still happening.
Yeah.
It's like I want to honor that voice, even if it's a jackal voice, that just says, you know, back off, shut up for a minute, or just whatever it takes to kind of get a little space, and then I maybe get clear. I've walked away from so many situations where I listened to so many things that were triggering so much pain, but I didn't say a word because I find the right way. And then afterwards, I feel horrible inside about standing up for myself, about not honoring that need in the moment, even if I wasn't clear what it was or how to say it, but that sometimes it's really helpful just to do something, you know, even if there's not a lot of clarity, just do something, you know. If it's on fire, just get out, you know. Don't sit and think about it.
I agree. Actually, the notion of a right way and a wrong way to say something might block you from just doing the very best you can to honor that need and just speak out. And then maybe eventually you can come to ways after you practice speaking out, eventually to do it in a way that is the most life-serving for you and the other person. But it takes practice speaking rather than not speaking.
I guess it's about honoring where I'm at. Someday I'd like to be that totally skillful Tai Chi master that can flow with every experience with perfect equanimity and grace. But in the moment, I'm still just a junior white belt, and sometimes something happens and I just am losing it, and I just need to do something to create the space where I can get that equanimity back.
Well, thank you. I would like to have a time that each of you can have a connection with someone else. So I'd like to move into the breakout space. And similar practice, A and B, and just do a quick check-in. What's alive in you in this present moment? Not a lot of storytelling. And then A, share something that is alive in you that you would really enjoy receiving support for, having to do with this inner work, with self-compassion. And as you share it, see if you can minimize any background story and just focus on the part of it that is the crucial stimulus or the life event. And do it with the intention to share, recognize reactive thinking, differentiate from that reactive thinking, empathize with that thinking if you're not able to differentiate, listen to those voices, listen for the feelings and the longings, and have B, the person who's listening, simply open with an empathic space, listen for the life that's in the other person, and then we'll go each way, and we'll come back into the main room. So anytime we're ready, just begin. I'd love to hear if there's anybody who'd like to share anything, any questions, any sharing that arose from that.
My partner and I, we both had a similar issue of, does NVC always work?
especially in high-intensity situations where someone's just said something which has really been, somebody trying to do NVC in an ER room with some incompetent, bad medical decisions, empathy sometimes is not efficient, at least in my experience, and sometimes it doesn't protect me when I need to be protected, and I'm like wondering, is it one tool amongst many, or can you get good enough with this tool that it can work even in the ER when
well,
they're not
it,
doing what...
Yeah, I see it. That's not what you mean by NVC. You know, you say, does NVC...
Yeah.
Now, when you say empathy, it may be that there's another need that's more prominent that I would want, like protection.
Yeah.
Is that NVC? So for me, NVC points to what is alive, what is the most important need that's present in the moment. Can I do what I can do in that moment to serve life? For me, that's NVC. It may not be empathy, but it may be screaming out in, hey, this is going on. I need some help. Take care of me. It may be the best that I know how to do in that moment. And for me, that, if you want to say, if that's how I define NVC, it's about listening for life, the needs, the longings, and expressing or taking care of that.
The question which came up, your example...
Yeah.
If the workman hadn't been fiddling with the thermostat, if he'd been going in, smashing chairs, cussing out people in the workshop, would you have spent the time to try to understand his needs? Would you have had that instant reaction of, I don't know, whatever it would have been?
Well, I don't know. It's hard for me to deal with hypotheticals. But at least I think that if that was the case, I would have had a sense of urgent energy, and the intention is to connect with him first. Now, it may be that I'd want to connect with him and ask him to come out of the room and say, to connect with what's going on. It's highly unlikely that a worker would do that. So that's why it's difficult for me to deal with hypotheticals.
Yeah.
But in any case,
yeah.
I want to connect with the life and do it with a sense of where the life calls me and a sense of intensity and urgency. I want to go with that. It may be that taking the time to empathize with him may not serve life in that situation as more than my asserting some energy and wanting to support people's needs in that room. I don't know what it would sound like. But it may not always take the form of quietly empathizing when there's a whole notion around protecting life. And in NVC, sometimes people call it the protective use of force. So it's about, it's life-oriented, and I may need to take a quick action to do that. Is that helpful?
That helps a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
All I have is just such a feeling of appreciation and gratitude for the sharing and vulnerability that others have brought to this. In my breakout, I was able to say, I still feel as if I'm sort of in a dark room, but there's a rope now that leads me to the light switch, kind of a feeling that this is a method for finding my way back out of what has felt like this swampland that I get stuck in. And part of it was physical illness, but also just, you know, the slings and arrows of daily life. I couldn't cope with the tumultuous emotions, and they were so exhausting. And now, at the very least, I know that when I collect myself, I have a way to approach it so that I can, as you say, slow down, look at what it is, and then, you know, to be back in touch with the beauty of what life really means to me instead of just being swept up in like a tornado of thought and emotion. I just appreciate what all of these classes have meant, and each and every person who's been here, speaking or silent. I don't know if that's responsive, but I just couldn't stop myself from wanting to share it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. In addition to hearing sharing about the paired work, there's time to hear about anybody who cares to share, reflecting on the whole class, anything that comes up when you reflect on taking this 10-session class. I'd love to hear any of that, and if anybody cares to share that. So there is a hand.
In the last session, when you talked about the body and it being a friend, it being a felt presence, I've been thinking about that ever since, trying to just get a sense of that in my own body. Definitely something I want to continue to feel into.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. That experience is so powerful and meaningful to me. And just to kind of reiterate one part of that is that, you know, it's like my cat. My cat is an innocent animal, you know. And if I could approach my body with the same care and love as I do taking care of my cat, is this an innocent being? Yes. Well, thank you.
I just want to express my gratitude for the map that you've given. I just feel it very intensely. And one piece that is really sticking with me is the discussion that you had between seeking and yearning. That's meant so much to me, and it's really explaining a lot. There are many things, but thank you so much, Robert. I really, really enjoyed the class.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just really wanted to express the depth of my gratitude for your willingness to offer this work through the Academy, Robert. It is so incredibly meaningful for me that you're reaching so many people with the self-compassion piece, because I know that it's what is going to bring peace within ourselves, which ultimately brings peace in the world. And I'm just so deeply touched.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So a couple more.
I just quickly want to express my gratitude for the class, for your teachings, and for everyone's participation. Today you mentioned that a part of this work is the remembering, and that's what I'm grateful for right now, is the last 10 sessions and the way that it has helped me to remember where I enjoy putting my focus as I work on reconditioning, I guess, my own patterns. So thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you also, and I did want to say that I've gotten a great deal out of this, and it's been helping me have more consciousness, slowing down, as the last person said, remembering, and a lot of wonderful nuggets. And I've been working with MVC for several years, and I feel like this has just deepened my ability to really do the work in a more conscious way. Just wanted to offer that, and thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing that. Okay, so in closing, I just want to express my appreciation for all of you who participated and were present in the class. And it's just one more drop in this great ocean of self-work and self-compassion, I think, that we are all in the world is hungry for. And I view that this experience in this small community contributes more to that, to the world in which we have more compassion for ourselves and other people. So appreciate your being here, your participating, and I'm hoping that in some way we can meet again, either through the NVC Academy or maybe in person. So thank you all, and we'll just say goodbye.